Wang.
Whoa.
She pretty?
What is this?
Let's talk about my condition, just what's wrong with it. Can I ask you a serious question?
All right, what's going on, Wang? Why'd they steal your girl? What do you say, Wang? Hey, Wang?
Megatron must be stopped, no matter the cost.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Autopod Decepticast, your bi-weekly podcast that delivers an episode-by-episode breakdown of the original G1 series. This is APDC, episode number 142, and today we'll be covering episode number 36 of the Transformers, Megatron's Master Plan, Part 2. This is your host, Aaron, and I can't believe I've never spoken about our bootlegging days. The year 1977. I was recruited by a Texas millionaire, Big Enos Burdett, and his son, Little Enos, to drive 400 cases of Coors from Texarkana to Atlanta, GA. You see, this was the 70s, and alcohol was still illegal in many counties in the land of Dixie. Still is in many ways. The bet, 28 hours, $80,000. I take it, and I recruit my good buddy, Caleb Snowman Carter, to drive a big rig full of illegal lager while I hit the trail in a tux-tinted T-top Trans Am. The trip is going swell when I pick up a runaway bride, 70s hot Sally Field. We make nice, but it turns out her abandoned beau was begotten by none other than Ryan J. Justice.
Damn it.
The J stands for Jet. Now I'm the bullseye of a lawman that's known for making bear meat out of bootleggers. Jet's going to barbecue my ass in molasses. Well, jurisdiction means nothing to a minister of moonshine moratorium mandates like MR Jet Justice. He chases me through Texas, Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, all the way to Georgia with all kinds of mishaps from the blunder of a bridge jump to a chopped off cruiser top. What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law. We continue to Atlanta with the contraband beer. With victory in sight, Caleb breaks through a barricade of a cop roadblock, opening the path to success with only 10 minutes left on the clock. Beer delivered. But who wants an 80K payoff when we can go double or nothing for an 18-hour outing to Boston and back for a bit of the chowder? Nobody, and I mean nobody, makes Sheriff Ryan Jet Justice look like a possum's pecker.
Oh my God.
Whoa.
That's it.
Ryan.
I'm Caleb, and I could be wrong. But so the concept with the Coors beer at the time is that in the 70s, you couldn't buy Coors beer east of the Mississippi River.
Okay.
And so their whole idea was like, we don't have any Coors beer here. It's out west. And so he was illegally bringing Coors brand beer
right
to the East Coast. Much like how you can't get Yuengling in the state of Missouri.
I don't know what that is.
That's
a good beer.
That's a good question. The reason you don't know is because Yuengling is actually a very popular domestic beer on the East Coast that they used to not sell west of the Mississippi, but you can get it in Arkansas now, apparently.
Also, I don't like beer, so I probably wouldn't know.
I don't know anything that I don't like.
What is Coors?
is this beer?
Why? Oh, no.
Was this...
I did make chili the other day, and I had but there was a beer that I was using for it, and I drank half of it and didn't hate it.
Yeah,
it was some kind of pills.
You're like my youngest son. It's like, do you like this? Have you ever tried it?
No, it's not like that. It's like, I will drink it if that's all that's available, but I don't prefer it.
Well, sure, I'll eat a shoe if that's the only thing left to
eat. Like the Donner Party.
Yeah. Okay.
Back to that. Yeah. Was Coors considered a premium beer at the time? Could they not have gone with Budweiser?
Because you think they
would be beer manufacturers in Atlanta? Yeah,
Of course they could have got a beer, but the thing is, they wanted to get Coors beer,
right?
And they're the kind of crazy assholes that were like, "Let's get some."
That's true. They liked the stakes of getting bought rubes to do these crazy.
They could have got some chowder right locally, but no.
That's right. It was just a bet for some rich right. guys. It didn't even matter.
No, there was nothing like. Yeah, they're playing.
They were
with
willing
these
to pay $80,000. Well, and the whole premise of the cops
chasing the bandit is not even has to do with the bootlegging. It has to do with Sally Field.
Yeah, or, and the principle of like...
I do like how you said 70s hot Sally Field.
Yes, exactly. I know it's not true, but when you see movies from the 70s, it's like everybody was just like, there was no really anything on the line except just the principle of having a good time and taking risks.
It was a great time to be a serial killer.
Yeah. See, everybody's having a good time.
The highways are the killing fields of America.
Yes.
Most truckers were killers. Not most. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. But I do love that
such
era.
Such as, what if, that'd be an interesting thing, if there's a story that we don't even know about in Smoking the Bandit where the truck driver, as they're driving, is picking just up killing. Women and killing them left and right.
Yeah. And he leaves his signature jug of piss.
Smokey,
he's the piss killer.
Smokey was a serial killer. The bandit easily fits the profile of being a serial killer.
I mean, Sally Field's lucky she wasn't turned into a lampshade.
That was the third sequel when they axed it because it was 1982.
It wasn't funny.
We can't be doing this,
it's not
guys.
Funny. It's not
I
funny
do love
anymore.
The heyday of the trucker movie and the trucker anthem. Oh, Convoy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Convoy?
I mean, I've never seen
Chris
it.
Chris Christopherson.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was it the trucking movie craze that was parallel to the idea of, I don't know if there's a better word for it other than trucker music, which is sort of that Johnny Cash style outlaw country, yes. But it all kind of sounds the same.
Red Savine did a lot of
road stories.
Trucker songs.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, like chicken and the egg thing. I do know that there was in the mid to late 70s, like country music kind of had a resurgence,
mm-hmm.
as far as presenting itself as outlaw,
right,
or as you know. Yeah, going against
that
the grain.
And a lot of story songs.
Yes, exactly. It reinforced this trucker culture in the 70s, which was mm-hmm. like a lot of road, a lot of road stuff. But I don't know what really.
I mean, I guess
underlies
between
that.
The 50s and the 70s, your highway system, interstate, yes. And is complete. You've got this infrastructure, and commerce is just booming, and so the trucking industry is just exploding. I'm guessing.
Yeah, but the 70s kind of were shitty for the economy. And
the gas crisis.
The 80s weren't a lot better.
I don't. It's interesting that why that was a popular thing, but it is interesting then that carries over into the Transformers because your leader of the Autobots is
a Peterbilt cab over.
It's a cab over.
That gives us license to move on. I think. Yeah.
But that's in a way, Transformers is the presentation of Optimus is a hangover from that.
I like it. Dang. I wonder if Optimus ever murdered a hitchhiker.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think so, but I got my eye on Roller.
Yeah.
He's shifty.
What if that would be an interesting mashup that you had Smokey and the Bandit and Smokey is driving Optimus Prime.
They're doing all these movie mashups right now.
I hate
with
that shit.
But they could do a Smokey and the Bandit, Optimus Prime. Cool, you would. There was never a Trans Am Transformer. Your closest one would probably be Trax, who is a Corvette. So at least you have an American car in that.
Nobody's driving me.
Well, it'd be hot. I think it'd have to be Hot Rod. You know,
it's true.
It'd have
personality
to be Hot Rod.
Wise.
And it.
Well, honestly, you could take a Trans Am and.
Yeah.
Did he have flames on the?
Yes.
Yeah.
So
you
could probably trance.
Is.
You could probably. You should try illustrating that, making a Trans Am in the color scheme, taking an old Trans Am in the color scheme of Hot Rod. And then
Prowl, of course, is Buford T. Justice. Well, just to complete it.
Sure.
What do you mean maybe?
Well, I like the idea of a Decepticon, like a popular character, like
that's true.
Like Megatron somehow being Buford T. Justice or Shockwave or something.
Starscream is his idiot son.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. You know what I mean?
We'll work this out.
Yeah, copyright APDC for these properties
not,
we don't own.
It's not Coors, it's just Energon.
Right.
Trying to run it to...
Land of the Metal Moon.
Anyway, there we go. That was a good brainstorm session that everyone just listened to.
How about... I think we got a few things to plug here, Caleb. You've been on some shit lately.
I have.
You've been on my shit list, that
mushrooms.
Is.
Oh, yeah, I'm high right now. I was on this Mike Seibert radio hour with Mike and Greg from Unfunny Nerd Tangent, and we discussed the Ronin anti-hero trope mm-hmm. stereotype and kind of analyzed it and discussed it and how it appears in different stories and movies. just some commonalities and characteristics of that type of character.
That means you actually got Greg to watch Road Warrior?
We did, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he watched it.
Like they strapped him down like Clockwork Orange and held his eyes open.
Yeah, he watched it. He wasn't
thrilled.
thrilled, but you know, he was honest, and I just have to, you know, lower my expectations that if just because I like something a lot doesn't mean that everybody else likes something a lot. Kind of like how you guys like Transformers a lot, and I'm just like here. But it was a really good conversation, and
to hear Mike characterize it, you took him to school.
I did take him to school. Actually, I
you walked them across the street holding hands.
I took notes. I actually studied for that.
Oh wow!
Whereas
I wonder what that's like to have a partner who does that.
So it was a good conversation, and I recommend our listeners to check out Mike Seibert Radio, in particular the discussion that me and him and Greg have about the Ronin archetype. I'm really excited about Greg and I both like Big Trouble in Little China a lot, and so now we're going to turn it on Seibert, because he's never seen that movie, and we're planning to do like an Unfunny Nerd Tangent involving Big Trouble in Little China. But what we might also do is we'll either just focus on Big Trouble, or we'll also loop in the other John Carpenter, Kurt Russell movies.
The Thing
and Escape from New York.
Wes and I recently watched again Big Trouble in Little China. That movie's fucking nuts.
I love it.
It is hilarious that I love Kurt Russell and he's just doing John Wayne in that movie.
Yeah, it was funny that like we were talking about the anti-hero, the archetype we were talking about says very little. Like, you know, the man with no name, and like the road warrior, Max, says very little. It's funny, then we started talking about Big Trouble in Little China, and Kurt Russell's character, Jack Burton, doesn't shut up the whole time.
Yeah, they're just mouthy pricks.
Like, whereas you know, you've got people supporting Man with No Name and Mad Max that are doing the exposition for him, mm-hmm. or they're doing the talking for him, whereas Jack Burton is just doing his own exposition and experiencing everything all at the same time, and it's hilarious. There's a good YouTube video out there that captures all of Jack Burton's questions that he asks in order through the whole movie. It's really funny. We should actually watch that right now.
It just occurred to me that maybe the whole silent, strong character is just, I don't know how to write this character. So he's just not going
to
say
that's fine. I would imagine that's a challenge, though. You have to tell a story with a protagonist who's not...
I think it's great. I don't think it's a madness at all.
Yeah, I don't find those characters terribly compelling. But
I do.
Yeah. I like those movies.
Yeah.
Just that is, for the listener, episode number 297 of Mike Seibert Radio, The Road Warrior and the Ronin Character Discussion.
Nice.
Yes.
And then as Ryan mentioned, I think we're going to be in the works with Ryan, definitely, me hopefully, for a Gremlins chat on Unfunny Nerd Tangent.
I can't think of Gremlins without that Key and Peele sketch.
I know. I actually got Melody to watch Gremlins 2 about 2 weeks ago.
Did
so that's
love
fresh
it?
In my head. She liked it.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
She enjoyed it.
It's great.
But she enjoyed that Key and Peele sketch. So
okay,
that was her primer for it.
Electricity Gremlin. We mentioned that sketch a lot.
It's a classic. But I haven't seen Gremlins 1 in a while, and I'm sure I'm not going to like it as much as Gremlins 2. But...
I like Gremlins 1 a lot. A lot. I like them both a lot for totally different reasons.
I put Gremlins and Big Trouble in the same universe. It seems
I could see that.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Mm-hmm.
You bring in Kurt Russell to take care of the Gremlins.
What is this? What is this animal? What's going on right now?
Ryan.
Yep.
Why don't you whip us up a cocktail reminiscent of the tranquilizer and cyanide-infused grape Flavor-Aid just to help us accept Decepticon supremacy?
I appreciate you using Flavor-Aid correctly.
I didn't want to say Kool-Aid just to have you correct me.
Like some kind of pompous ass about Jonestown.
What the hell's happening?
I don't know, man.
There's more glasses in front of us? Is this a 1-2 buckle my shoe?
Well, I got a surprise for you fellers.
Uh-oh.
Before we try a cocktail proper, I just finished the inaugural run of the Jet Fumes gin.
Oh.
And
for those who don't know, Ryan purchased a still and has been stilling Is that the way to think of this?
Yeah, distilling. I did a mash, and then I let that set for 7 days, and then I distilled it, and then did a second run to distill with aromatics. And we can talk about that if you guys want to try it and see what it... I ended up with about, I started out with 10 liters of mash, and I ended up with about 2.5 liters, which is about equal in quarts, of hearts, is what they call them, which is the best part of the distillate. And then heads and tails, which come on the end, both ends of the hearts, you save those and rerun them later with another batch of heads and tails, and you can get some more distillate. So I got,
Does it develop the flavor more to hang on to that?
Well, there's some stuff in there you don't want, and so you can distill it again to get more of the good stuff. Like, nothing dangerous. You discard everything that the four shots, which is like everything up to 173 degrees. That's the methanol that'll make you go blind. You just throw that out. And then the rest, in the middle is the good stuff. And then on both ends, you can distill it again, save it and keep it for a bunch of runs, and then distill it all, and you can get some more of the good stuff. The hearts, as they say. So if you guys want to try it.
All right. This is Jet Fumes Gin.
Yeah.
Ooh, it's got a nice bouquet.
I like that gin very much. It's more aromatic and flavorful than most gin I've ever had.
I feel like, yes. I think the aromatics are a little too aggressive.
I don't mind it, but I guess if I'm drinking it straight, yes, I like it with all of the aromatics. I suppose maybe if I mixed it with something, they'd get in the way, but I really like it with all that aromatic.
I agree. I feel like the nasal part of the aromatic is stronger than the flavor part, personally. Like, I don't know if you use juniper in this or not, but...
Yeah, juniper goes in all gin. I use that. I use juniper. I used cardamom, lemon and lime, or lemon and orange peel, and coriander.
I was going to say the citrus comes through more than a juniper. Does.
Yeah, the juniper feels like it's a little lost, and I feel like coriander is a little too heavy. So I actually mixed this. I think I'm going to save at least one bottle. I got about 3 bottles of this out of it, and I think I'm going to save at least one bottle, and the other ones I'm going to maybe mix with the next run, which I think I'll just do juniper and like maybe some citrus. Or
if you were to market this, I think a citrus top note gin could be something that's a unique differentiator.
Yeah, well... Thanks. Whenever I get a one that I like that I think is a little more balanced, I'll do a cocktail with it for us.
Awesome. This is good.
I like the first run.
Thanks. It was a lot of fun to do, and now that I know what I'm...
Oh my God, I can't see. What happened?
Yeah.
Where are you guys?
Good space work on an audio medium.
We're done here.
I have another... I just yesterday started another mash, so I'll be distilling on Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay. Yeah. What does a professionally run gin, how long does that take produce?
It's like about 7 days is about the to get the alcohols done fermenting.
So the aging thing is a completely a whiskey thing then, when you do.
Well, that's after you've distilled
more grain heavy.
The mash is always like a week, and then as long as the air doesn't get to it, you can keep the mash just sitting. But like the aging is after you've like distilled it.
For you to do something that's aged, if you wanted to make a whiskey,
mm-hmm.
would you have to buy a little oak barrel or something to stick it in for a while?
You don't have to, but that would give it a certain kind of flavor.
And color. You can. I am planning on make whiskey. I do have a bunch of corn. I think I'm going to do rum next after I perfect my gin. I do have a bunch of corn that I can make into a mash. That my dad told me about this thing where instead of buying a whole barrel, you can buy like this fired oak wedge that if you just have a little bit of whiskey, it's just basically a block of wood you put in there, and it acts as if you've casked it. So I might try.
They do that with Ant Bush with Budweiser beer. They put mm-hmm. they put wood in the tanks when they're making their beer.
Sounds like a shortcut to me. And Ryan, don't take shortcuts.
Right. That's all I do.
Yeah, congratulations, Ryan.
Yeah, great work.
It's fun. I'm enjoying it. If you're a federal agent, don't come at me. So that was it. Now we can do our proper cocktail. Which is the Sean Burger's Hot Buttered Justice.
OK. Okay.
Yeah, I've taken. Yeah, sometimes I'm gonna make it a theme each episode.
I encourage it.
This is a hot buttered rum from page 60 of Jigger Beaker and Glass. 1.5 teaspoons brown sugar, a twist of lemon, 1.5 teaspoon lemon juice, 1/2 teaspoon ground cloves, 1/4 teaspoon nutmeg, 2 tablespoons of butter, 1 ounce or 30 mils of dark rum, 1 ounce or 30 mils of aged rum, and then 3 ounces of very hot water, which I use an electric kettle, but you don't want it boiling, and then a cinnamon stick.
May we?
And that's what we've got in front of us.
Cheers.
I'm glad. This is the one good thing about the weather getting cooler, is that Ryan starts making warm drinks.
Remember that hot egg that he served us not that long
hot
ago?
Hot egg?
Well, wasn't there a really hot eggy drink that had a raw egg in it?
It wasn't hot. It was just room temperature. Yeah, it was hot.
I remember that one.
In your mind, it was like probably like hot. Like it was just like, raw.
No, there was one that was really creamy and gooey.
I don't know.
All right. Well, this is great.
I think you must have dreamed it. This is good. I've been testing this all week.
It's good.
There's a nice balance to it.
Again, the presentation is appropriate.
Yeah, I use some of my jars.
Your glass curation to drink is like on point always.
Thanks. I might have a problem because I just go to the flea markets and buy glasses. I'm like, this looks cool. This will be good in an episode. Yeah. I have so much glassware.
Well,
the worse. Flavor, even though you did not, none of the ingredients were sugary or sweet. I was still expecting it to be sweet. Just
well,
by
there's
the
brown
visual.
Sugar.
Well, it's not overwhelming. And it's really kind of more of a, I don't want to say savory, but the butter comes through more than any sweetness.
Yeah, I tried it a couple of different ways. I wanted to get, so you kind of got all the notes. Like I said, the way that they had it before, it was whole cloves and less sugar, and it was just hot rum, basically, to me, is what it tasted like. So
I love it. I'll be sipping it responsibly throughout the episode. Speaking of episode, before we get into it.
Oh, shit.
Oh, I have a birthday gift for Ryan. I'm late.
Yay. I like the rapping. Jesus Christ.
I sometimes like to rap like an asshole.
You just use what you got.
That's right. This is going to be a very appropriate gift for reasons that will be made apparent momentarily.
This is fucking cool. It's like a wooden punch bowl and... Yeah, it's a wooden punch bowl, like almost like a tiki set.
Yeah,
with cups. There are like 12 cups here.
I just figured you needed something more for your glass collection that you were just saying you had a problem with.
Hold that. What's that?
Ladle. Yeah, this is. All, I mean, I'll take a better picture of it later. But yeah, this is pretty sweet. Thank you.
I look forward to a cocktail.
I love it.
This.
I'm gonna have to make a tiki drink or something.
You know, they appear hand carved. They have to be hand carved because I can see on this one they fucked up.
There's glitter in them. There's glitter in this one.
They didn't charge me for the glitter.
These are pretty rad. I'm looking forward to drinking a drink out of these bad boys.
I love it. Thank you.
Save it for the summer. You're welcome.
Yeah. Good job.
I got that at an antique place here in town. I haven't been out of the house really since March. This is the first day out. Melody and I went out and on a kind of a date, and we. It's been a couple hours. It's on Traffic
You went on a date
way.
Looking for stuff for me?
Traffic Way, yeah.
So, I mean, I've gotten out, not like going to the mall or anything, but I...
She's been to the mall and places like but that. But I haven't been.
You've just been just home.
Just kicking it.
Good for you.
Kicking it at home.
I'll go out to a hike or something like that. Have you rode your bike at all? Or
I've hit the trails. Yeah. Although it's getting cold and wet now, it's not as much of a thing. I just haven't been out in public shopping. I mean, I've been to the grocery store. I've been to I'm exaggerating.
Well,
I've gone out for necessities and things.
But
you're
not just going.
We haven't gone out on a date. Like we went and did this. We went antiquing. We went to a couple antique places, and then we. We didn't eat at Golden Girl, but we picked up some cocktails and food to bring home and eat at Golden Girl. But we had a drink while we were there. That was weird. That was my first time being in a bar and people are there. And I'm like, but there's people here.
It's actually, I've done it, well, since I've still been playing music like once a month, it's weird to go out and there's like people out hanging out in the bar. And I'm like, fuck all you people for being out. And then I'm like, I'm on stage entertaining you. And then so.
It's almost like Americans are like, well, I guess everybody's going to die. Who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah, but like 40% of people plan to travel for Thanksgiving. So thanks for that. It's worse than it's ever been before right now. And 250,000 people have died. So, but I'm glad you have your freedoms.
We were sitting outside while having our drink. Yeah. And we were very far away from anybody. But the inside was getting packed.
Ugh.
ish. I mean, they've actually separated. You could tell they'd taken tables out and kept people separate, but
yeah.
All right. Well, that was our COVID moment.
Yeah, let's get that out of the way. There we go.
Let's talk about a couple shouts out that I have. First of all, to our loyal patrons, our international postal system has finally delivered all
of the packages.
All packages. It took about, I've waited 2 months to get things from China. But it took something like 3 months for our booty boxes to get to Australia, maybe a month and a half, 2 months to get to Great Britain. If you, listener, would like to wait multiple weeks, possibly months, to receive shipments, consider joining our Patreon. We have many levels, many benefits, mostly art-related. Check it out at patreon.com/apoddcast. If you don't want to commit to a longer-term relationship, that's cool. We're down for a one-night friends with Benny's kind of thing, too. You can visit our APDC store at autopoddecepticast.com/store, or, you know, it's the holidays and after a year like 2020, just remember the person that might need to be treated the most is you. Shouts out. We've got a couple iTunes, Apple Podcast reviews that I'd like to share with you all. The first one is from a listener who goes by the name Prowlestator. And
that's a good name.
The headline is "One of the Best."
All
my favorite podcasts draw you in and feel like they're talking to you. Like, you're one of the gang. This is one of the best at doing that. I always feel like I'm in on the joke and love the extra segments like trivia and what was going on in pop culture when the episode was released.
I just wonder if anybody cares about some of the extraneous shit we do.
I always look forward to this every couple of weeks and wish they released episodes more frequently.
It's a lot of work.
If everybody just gave us a bunch of money,
we could make this our full-time job.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, we would need a lot more money.
But it's possible.
It is possible. Tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
Open up their wallets.
Yeah.
Prowlestator, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm glad that you feel like you are a part of the team. You are a part of the team, Prowlestator.
Yeah. Everybody that listens to us is part of the team.
We need a special phrase for the community. The APDC
crew. Autopod Deceptor crew.
Okay. I don't have anything
or
better.
The Decepticast, as in the cast of characters.
That is true. Many listeners are cast members, I would say,
that's right.
In this weird universe that we live in. Perpetual Dark Matter is our second shout out today from iTunes. And his headline is, "These dudes are exceptionally underrated."
That's fucking the truth.
Speak it.
Preach. I appreciate the work they've put in and have been listening since episode one. Thank you for that.
Wow.
Anyone that would give them one star should get kicked in the bottom cheeks. First of all, I don't advocate for violence, but bottom cheeks is hilarious.
Pretty funny. It seems harmless.
It's good to hear a review of the movie and shows from people who don't know every single thing about the characters and aren't pretentious D-bags.
Well, one does not preclude the other.
Well, at least two of them aren't.
Oh, sorry, Caleb.
I don't... wait.
See what I did?
Let me finish this. They were probably the only ones that bathed before going to the last TFCon.
Oh, we're definitely talking about Ryan.
Given
now.
Some credit. So that's a great review. At least two of us aren't D-bags. Let's do a quick 1, 2, 3 and point out to the one. Let's point at the one we think is a D-bag that he's referring to.
I don't want
to
do that.
Are you ready?
This
no,
is great.
No.
One.
We don't have to point. We can just say
we did it.
Okay, we're not playing that game then, but Caleb and I are on the same page.
Well,
I'm totally cool with
it. It's such a wonderful review, and then it ends with, like,
I'm totally
an
cool
insulting
with it.
Line.
I love it. That's my favorite.
I feel like he is the D-bag that you love, though. And not love to hate.
It's an interesting thing where reviewers are really...
they're probably talking about me.
it's interesting where, assuming that they're talking about Ryan, it's interesting where there's kind of a fandom of shitting on Ryan.
I'm into it.
But he's kind of our mascot.
They love him.
The van, the persona,
the douchebaggery.
The serial killers. What did you call yourself? A pedantic?
Pedantic? I don't know. Just pedantic.
Okay.
He's just
prescriptivist. Pedantic, yes. Prescriptivist.
He's speaking truth. He's speaking truth, I think.
His truth.
His truth.
The way I see it.
Thank you, Perpetual Dark Matter.
Yep. Yeah, that was thank good. You.
We will not second guess ourselves at all on who's the... We're all a little D-bag, aren't we, at the end of the day?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I've never second guessed myself about anything.
Okay, well, Ryan, just exemplified.
Last episode recap. A failed political fat cat is fooled by the chrome-foiled foes and helps up frame our diode defenders for a fuel heist, which sees them flogged by a one-way furlough to the atomic fireball. So strap in as we continue round two of Megatron's master plan. Donald F. Glut.
It's interesting to listen to this one, to watch the talk about this one now after the election.
Yeah, I was going to say it was much easier to take. Yeah. I mean, we still have yet to see.
We're still in the throes of what horrible of conspiracy.
We're edging a little closer to.
It's really.
But anyway, yeah, go ahead.
It's just really weird that the American system takes so long for the transition of power. In most other countries, it's like a couple days. Yeah. We take 3 months.
We open up with what is already a very well-animated Decepticon Day parade through Central City.
I don't think we touched on this last episode, but where the fuck are the Dinobots? Are they just chilling in the cave when all this went down?
They're standing behind that door ready to be put into action.
Right here where we have this open up with this.
Grimlock is in space with the Autobots.
Yeah,
at least
he does. That might be an animation error. In this parade, I did read somewhere on the TF Wiki who was obviously someone who was in a band and is very salty about inaccurate musical representation. He wrote, "The way the cymbal player is playing the cymbals is wrong. Playing them in this manner produces poor control of the sound and risks damage to fine cymbals, which are not designed for such usage." I just thought it was funny that was a pretty sweet Megatron suit we just flew by.
Yeah. The whole thing, the whole parade is just really distressing to me. I'm glad I'm watching this now and not a couple of weeks ago, but it still is distressing because
this is the Million Decepticon March.
Yeah, it's like...
This is, again, where we see Megatron not letting Starscream in on the plan.
That's true.
Which I think I understand.
Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Which is an adequate question.
I'm starting to think that Megatron might not be the stable genius he claims.
You've got a blimp with the Decepticon logo, Sean Berger's
in it. They got a lot of merch out right away.
No, they did
Spark Plug and Chip. They're in the front row for this celebration of the damned, and they're disgusted with their community. It's clear that humanity has fully red-pilled.
Oh, yeah.
People, why did they show up to the parade?
I saw someone with a QAnon shirt in the audience.
Yeah, this is what it feels like to live in Missouri as us.
I think I'd live in a lot of places in the United States right now.
Megatron's playing some 5D chess here.
5D. Ooh.
There's the merchandising angle on this. Yeah, there's everything.
Got a blimp and everything.
Meanwhile, Spike is still searching for proof of the Autobots' innocence.
Okay. Whoa.
Yeah. Right off the bat, the timelines are way fucked up all of a sudden. They've made some strange choices.
Yeah, they do this in the next two-parter also, where they retcon the end of it to be completely different. So Spike is still looking at this videotape, and Ravage just now showed up, which we saw him do in the last scene. So that means
Was there a shot of him in the parade? I wasn't paying attention.
No, but in the last episode, Ravage interrupted Spike.
Yes.
So this parade... Okay. Implies the Autobots were sentenced, shot into space, Megatron went to the Ark, changed the trajectory, Berger organized a Decepticon Day, and changed into a tuxedo with a stretch limo convertible. The public showed up, all the while Spike was watching this video.
Right. And wrestling with Ravage.
It's a ludicrous plot hole.
It's true. Not only is that timeline a little screwy, they, for whatever reason, have now put the unveiling of the Decepticon ruse in the middle of the city instead of in this deserted oil field.
Yeah,
so
on the videotape.
If they were actually in the city, there would be no conspiracies because perhaps thousands of people would have seen them disrobe and not be who they were pretending
to be. Maybe Dinobot Island is still hanging around. Some space and time's all jacked.
It could be. I like that. Spike, he has the proof he needs. It's time to get it back to the trial, I guess, and the Autobot excommunication, the parade. Spike's very good at battling Ravage. He's dodging his attacks and ultimately traps him underneath a huge shelf of video cassettes.
A big shelf.
I think the Zapruder tape might be in there, the unedited version.
Why is the tape white?
Why not?
It's just very confusing. The tape Spike holds is white.
There's like, a few different. There's a few white.
Yeah,
tapes
I guess it's just a weird. I just thought it was weird. Maybe it's just because like somebody who did this, like a lot of the tapes are gray. I'm using the same voice for the symbol guy, but you know, in broadcasting, I don't know.
I still don't understand. The tape looked maybe dark gray to me.
I think
when he was holding
those television stations had like tape had cassettes that were like gray. And red. I think they had him color coded.
Gold like Zelda. Okay. So it's at least it's consistent.
Maybe it stands out.
I just thought it was weird. Yeah, I guess you're right. It doesn't matter. I'm not upset. I just thought it was strange.
Let's transition to a fucking sock hop at a local teen hotspot, a giant
weird
gymnasium. The kids are dancing to the hottest hits of 1984. No doubt some Careless Whisper, Dire Straits' Money for Nothing, You Belong to the City. Who's chaperoning this event? None other than Soundwave's audio entourage, including Blue Rumble, Laserbeak, and Ravage, who I guess is totally given up on the Spike thing.
I feel like Rumble truly is enjoying this, and then Laserbeak looks about a second from ripping that dude's face off.
Oh, yeah. For real.
Man, I'd pay to see.
Everybody's just bought into this. They're having fun.
Back to Starscream's point from 45 seconds ago. Like, what the fuck? Well, how does this roll into the plan?
Yeah.
The Autobots are gone. You don't need to
pretend
ingrain
anymore.
Ingrain yourself in human life and hit the club with illegal teens.
For some reason, Megatron's waiting for it to be dramatic when he gives the reveal.
Yeah.
Laserbeak dancing is a pretty awkward thing as well.
Laserbeak won a cracker.
Yeah.
That's so offensive.
I'd be mad at that guy, too.
Like, yeah, fuck you, buddy.
The other note on the teen dance party, the background music is different from anything I think we've ever heard before. I've never heard this on any Transformers soundtrack.
It's cool. Sounds like a Dionne Warwick song or something.
Yeah, it's dated.
No, I love it, though.
Oh, me too.
It's great.
No idea what's going on there. It's time to catch up with our Autobot pals in space. Cosmos seems to be spearheading their route. And
yeah, so he's here now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cosmos just showed up.
I can't remember if we saw him being loaded up into the ship.
I don't think so.
Episode, but it seems that their route is predetermined. They're upset. Everyone, even loyal Ironhide, is taking it out on
He does
Prime.
Give Prime some shit.
And it doesn't take much peer pressure for Optimus Prime to flip-flop. Cliff Jumper, take us back to Earth.
This is weird, too, because like Cosmos says, but the Decepticons won and we lost and bought a one-way ticket to nowhere. But aren't you guys going home?
Do you think you're going to Cybertron?
I don't think they know where they're going. I think they're just going.
Just deep space? They're not even... But no, because the Teletran 1 said Cybertron last episode.
Ah, gotcha.
It's true.
Then I would be excited.
Yeah, they seem mad for no real good reason.
Other than they lost.
I mean, sure, I'd be upset for Spike and Chip and Sparkplug, but if I were them, I'd be like, fuck the rest of those humans. Like, they get what they deserve.
And why would you be mad at Optimus Prime? I guess for
going
acquiescing
along with it?
To humanity's desire to put them on a kangaroo trial.
Maybe. I do. It does come out of nowhere, but I do like Prime second-guessing himself where he says, maybe this was dumb. Just turn this shit around.
Cliffjumper takes to the controls. They're not responding. It's as if Megatron used his arm cannon to program Teletran 1 to send us to the sun. Of course, Prime said. Megatron can't type. Hound, check our destination is something he says at this
point.
Which
they never thought about doing in the first place.
Also, maybe just ask Cosmos, who seems to like, hey, maybe, guys, we're flying directly toward the sun, by the way.
Yeah. In fact, they are about 3 football fields from the sun, by my measure. Shit's bad. They're getting too close to the sun. The Autobots are losing control of their functions while their circuits are sizzling. Everyone's burning up except for new Season 2 Autobot Cosmos, who's, I guess, maybe built to withstand this kind of radiation.
That's what I'm thinking.
Even
the inside of him
can't manage their course.
The inside of Cosmos is really cool. I don't know why he's spinning on his axis like that, but I dig it.
Yeah. They should have just got inside Cosmos.
I kind of thought that was maybe one of the ways they were going to escape.
Yeah, it like, would have made sense.
Except he's tiny, but not that anybody cares about that. The shots of the ship in the front burning are pretty gross, but the ones from behind I think are pretty sweet as it approaches the sun and burns. Yeah.
It's good animation, the whole episode.
It's pretty good.
What kind of accent does Cosmos have?
I don't know.
Did you notice?
It's just kind of generic.
I thought it was Scottish.
That's all we're going to get. I thought we might get a little more.
Well,
I thought it was Scottish, and then it sounded kind of maybe it was supposed to be Russian.
I just realized why Megatron hasn't revealed yet. He's waiting for the Autobot ship to explode.
That's good thinking. You're smart
so they're,
guy.
So they're on. They're sizzling.
So yeah, this is where Megatron is watching the ship head toward the sun.
And Cosmos isn't the only thing that is withstanding the sun's power, as Megatron apparently has a satellite following the Autobots so he can watch them careen towards the sun, which is what he is doing right now as Burger is begging to get his three cities. That's pathetic.
Burger is pathetic?
Yeah.
No, dude, he's got it together.
You promised me three cities. So... still trying to up the ante. How pathetic.
Megatron counts down to zero. We see Burger's Autobot ship crash into the sun.
Well, as you said, Caleb, yes, the ship sounds like cicadas as it heats up. The same sound maybe solar energy just sounds like cicadas or bugs because that's the same sound we got from the solar needle episode.
Yeah, weird thing where they're like, how do we make this sound? I don't know. Throw the cicada sound at it.
What do we have in the bank?
Boom. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a cool this bit where it explodes. Yeah, that was neat.
All right, the Autobots are finally destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
It's time for Meg and his merry men to hit up a press conference. Meanwhile, Spike is revealing to the mayor that the footage he has proves the Autobots' innocence. It's conclusive. So how could we have been so goddamn dumb?
This guy's the dumbest mayor that's ever been.
It's impossible to bring the Autobots back. There must be something we can do. We transition to young Justin in his one percenter Hampton's cottage. He's fucking a shitty colorer, and he's coloring Megatron. They've already published coloring books. Back to the merch thing.
Oh, I think they had all that shit ready to go.
Shut up, Justin. The real Megatron's on TV. There's a policy question. What are you going to do now that the Autobots are gone? And that's our big reveal moment. Well, we're going to fucking take over your planet and suck it dry of energy.
At this press conference, Megatron opens it up by saying, "People of Earth, this is Megatron. Any questions?" So that's where David S. Pumpkins got. Yeah.
I like that.
Oh, boy. And then it flips the script.
Oh, does he ever? And they all deserve it. They all deserve his punishment. Every single one of them.
Quick side note, but relevant from the standpoint of costumes, which is what the Decepticons wore to get in this situation. Did you know that throughout the 90s and perhaps even before, Donald Trump would personally connect with different journalists, but he would masquerade as a publicist for himself? And it was a publicist that was often named John Miller or John Barron. And he would call established journalists for established publications and just talk about how great he was and how they need to...
Nothing surprises me anymore.
That sounds like an Andy Kaufman bit.
There would be these fawning interviews. And one in particular was around the time he was divorcing his wife. And he was calling to basically brag about all the beautiful women that were interested in Trump. And there's recorded... These conversations are recorded. You can find them on YouTube. And it is fucking weird to listen to it. Because it's so obviously Donald Trump... but he's just pretending to be somebody else.
I would love it if he pretended to be a woman, like that's dating. Oh my God, he's got the biggest dick.
Oh God, it's just all
he's
so
He's very
bad.
Good at the... I've heard is called lovemaking.
He needs to go away so bad. I can't wait for him to go away.
The reporter immediately goes, "We've been had." which just this episode, I already don't have a great relationship with our species, but this episode already, I'm like, yeah, God, I hate us. We do deserve to go extinct. Before that, before we quit to that, Burger's guard then goes, we've been working for a traitor. Which is like, now you're indignant. You're part of a private army, and you've definitely seen him like escort a senator to suck off a little boy or something.
There should be no surprises on
so this is the drawing line. All right, well, yeah, but then this whole sequence with the Seekers wilding out in the city is awesome.
Yeah, it's a really good animation, and really well done. Like, those buildings that they're flying, they're plowing through is badass. I could just watch a half an hour of that.
Yeah, I think that was a ramjet that just blows through a building, mm-hmm. and then one of them just like strafes one and just blows the windows out, mm-hmm. which is badass.
It's cool.
And yeah, they're firing on citizens below. When he flew through that building, people had to die.
Sure.
Absolutely.
That we couldn't show that.
There is some attempt to explain it that people didn't die on the TF wiki of like, well, there are cracks in the building. Maybe it was abandoned.
People still live in those buildings.
It's true. And then that the office building where they strafe and all the windows explode was definitely looked fine. Somebody died there.
They should have just gone with the trademark.
There it is. Yeah, it's Thrust.
That's really
that.
Nice looking.
Yeah, it's
they should have gone with the trademark of when that building collapses, like dozens of people jump out with parachutes. Like they do in all the airplanes.
I got to say, the transformations of the Seekers in this episode are weird. They transform like sideways. It just doesn't look very good. Anyway, that's just me.
I still say the animation's fantastic.
The animation's good. There's shading's good. Yeah, overall.
There's a couple awkward drawings, but yeah, overall, it's really nice. We're going back inside the studio where the press conference is happening, and we see Burger. He's starting to go a little loopy, and he's relaying to Spike, Chip, and Sparkplug what he's seen, and the Autobots have perished in a cosmic funeral
pyre. Can you play that speech? Because he gets really crazy poetic.
He goes crazy.
He looks like he's gone crazy.
Yeah. It is over. I saw the Autobot ship like a silver bullet streaking toward the sun, and it collided with destiny. I saw the end. They died in a cosmic funeral pyre.
You don't think what he said is true, do you?
There's not much room left for hope.
Oh, no.
Lambs to the cosmic slaughter.
Yeah, they're showing when they illustrated him saying that, they're showing him like being remorseful and like sad. But when you hear it, he just sounds like it was destiny, and he was like, it was awesome. So it's like, what
I get
he was saying
that he's
quite
not happy about it. I felt my tone, my takeaway was that he was freaked out.
I felt that way
too. Because he's been tricked too.
How has he been tricked?
Well, he...
Oh, that's right. He was tricked by the Decepticons.
Yeah.
And he believed that the Autobots were bad.
And now Megatron is hanging it all on him, like, with the help of Mr. Burger.
I know, yeah. He's definitely throwing Burger under the bus. Yeah.
I don't think you had to prove anything to Burger. I think he just decided to believe that the Autobots were evil.
Well, he was looking for anything that would help his cause.
Confirmation bias.
He's not a good person. Just because he was tricked doesn't mean he's...
Oh, no. He's sympathetic. He's a piece of shit.
I'm glad that kind of stuff doesn't happen in reality.
Yeah, get a drink in you.
Megatron renames the city. He's claimed it
not
for
very
his own,
cleverly.
And he calls it Megatronia 1.
Yeah.
He promises, this isn't the last city that I'm going to do this shit to. The Autobots are gone. Spike is still determined to clear their names.
This makes no sense. This videotape is meaningless now because you know it was all a trick.
Right.
Everybody knows it was a trick.
Right.
So just this videotape doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
No.
He runs off despite that.
He's still got the tape.
With the tape in hot pursuit, but he trips. The tape is then destroyed by Laserbeak. But you're right. The tape is meaningless. So Spike doesn't need to run away with it. At the same token, Soundwave doesn't need to send anybody
chase after
it either.
It's just habit. It's like a prey drive. You see a human running, you send Ravage.
And again, Spike is so good at dodging Ravage.
Mm-hmm. Ravage is
amazing.
Ravage is not very good at, he's good at, jumping at things, but not good at, landing on them. He always crashes into shit behind them.
And Burger jumps into the scene to try and save Spike. He takes a swing at Laserbeak.
Yeah, it's Spike that shines the light in Ravage's eyes, which is actually a tech spec weakness. Ravage is blinded by a bright light. We saw B do that in another episode with his headlights.
I'm glad that Spike pays attention to the back of the box.
He has that little red transparent rectangle.
Thanks. Spike pleads with Megatron not to hurt his pals.
That was really touching, actually.
It was. But there's nothing to worry about because they're all going straight to the gulag.
Why should I want to hurt them? Healthy slaves do much more work. So for those of you out there playing APDC Bingo, you can mark off slaves on your card.
Yep.
Berger decides to switch sides right back to the Decepticons when Megatron promises him his reward. He'll get everything he's earned, which you can tell right by the way Megatron says that. It's a monkey paw play on words totally. Situation.
Absolutely. For some reason, I was gravitating toward, there's a guy with a tank top.
That has an H on it?
H.
Yeah, okay. I just noticed that too.
Harvard.
That's wicked awesome.
Help.
We have a montage of forced labor.
I think, was that the first appearance we've seen of Blitzwing and Astrotrain?
Astrotrain. We have seen Blitzwing in other episodes.
Interesting.
We start at an oil refinery. You got to keep it classic.
Of course.
Humans are pushing around carts of Energon. Okay. And I guess Rumble is a slave as well because he has to harvest Energon too. Seekers are standing guard. You know, if you should hire slaves to stand guard. I mean, if you're going to get slaves, you don't want to be doing any work yourself.
Well, I feel like they might sympathize with their own kind.
Yeah, but that's when you punish them, Ryan.
God, it makes sense.
I'm always impressed at the variety of different ways to get Energon into the cube.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's an endless way of getting the Energon from the resource into the cube.
Yeah, like that.
Shoot at the barrel.
It basically just absorbs what it's ready to absorb any kind of energy.
And convert it.
How it's explained.
Yeah. It's converting it immediately. We're inside some mines. We've got cone heads that just another new way. You just fire on a pile of coal and you light it up and it just sucks the sparks into the Energon cubes. They're really smart technology.
Yeah. A couple of things with this. First of all, the energy manacles are doing nothing that the humans have on. Why are they even there?
Oh, because they're like 3 feet wide?
Yeah.
They're not really restricting their movement.
You can play
at all.
Jump rope with them.
It's but, just to let them know that they're...
They're slaves.
Slaves.
But then that part right at 11:21 with the dude pushing the coal cart, you could probably lose the coat and tie. I mean, I dress.
You got to work in what you're in.
I guess you're not allowed to strip. It'd be much more effective if everybody like was, you know, there are no women here. It just occurred to me.
They're in another part of the whole process.
Yeah, they're in a slave camp making quilts or cooking. I don't know.
For what?
Washing dishes.
They're stitching together Energon cubes.
They go over and like hold the Energon cube over a pie, and it just sucks up the steam.
Yeah. Oh, that is the most inefficient method of energy transfer ever. Leave it to a woman.
Yeah, 50s style, like they're vacuuming Energon in the house.
Spits Energon cubes outside the back of the...
I guess it's...
Yeah, where are the women?
I guess you don't really want to see women being like carrying things around and being slaves. I don't know. It's easier to take.
Do you
want to
see
men.
Slaves?
You don't, but I guess it's easier to take if it's dudes. I don't know.
I'm sure they've got something for them to do. Don't worry, ladies.
This all felt really sexist.
It's clearly a bias. It's clearly a bias, in my opinion, because it's just saying that women don't have the strength to be a slave in the first place.
I think that's the implication.
Nah, whatever. Yeah, we know where we're at here.
We've exhausted this.
Then, so we go from oil to coal, and turbines is now where we are revisiting or something. There's hoses filling up Energon cubes. Again, I don't know why the Transformers are doing any work, but they are. And this is where Spike, Chip, and the mayor are stationed, along with surprise guest slave Sean Berger.
Yeah, which is... Oh, what a shot. Wait a minute. He got what he deserved. Spike does say here, I still can't forget how he tried to help me. And I'm like, I can. Fuck that guy. Okay, so again, right here we see the mayor... toggling switches back and forth, which is, I guess, supposed to be generating electricity. I don't know what that's all about. Maybe it's just
there's
to give them something to do.
There's a lot of toggling. Keep toggling.
Yeah. It's just so silly.
There's something off about Sean Berger. He's continuing to kind of spout nonsense.
Just muttering.
And
he's having a mental breakdown.
Life is sure tough.
I think
without the Autobots.
At one point, in here, at that point, he goes, I remember him clearly saying, "I won the presidency."
By a lot.
By a lot.
So the Autobots, it turns out, guys, are alive.
I actually didn't hate the way the Autobots survived. The bar is so low at this point, though, I don't know if it even matters. But
it's pretty amazing, and you would think it would be draining his powers, but basically Trailbreaker has created a force field just in time, and that force field is acting like a placenta of sorts, holding all the Autobots with Cosmos pulling at the handle end. And
a placenta?
It's good to see they're alive toward this end there, but they're still headed toward the sun.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to revisit this placenta thing.
It's a weird choice.
Amniotic sac. How about that?
All right. That's better. Yep. I'll go with that. So Cosmos says he can't change direction because he's still plugged into the course for the sun by Teletran 1. And I'm like, what? Why? When was that ever established?
Yeah, why would he also be programmed?
I do know why, which we'll touch on later.
In which case, then, you could say all the Autobots are programmed, and if the ship's destroyed, they would just start walking towards the sun in space. Just going nowhere, but trying to get to the sun.
There is a practical but laughable reason why he can't change course, which we'll discuss in script deviations.
Back to Spike. He and Chip hatch a plan to help Chip break loose. We go to Teletran 1 and we're going to figure this shit out. Spike provides cover masterfully by ramming Ravage into some electrical control units. This distraction gives the mobilized human an opportunity to roll out of the facility, but not before being detected. Thrust is sent to retrieve Chip, but Chip manages to sneak on board a cargo truck and skips the facility. Back to our trucker culture conversation.
I don't mean to diverge too much, but I just noticed that any time a Decepticon is pushed up against a panel that's made of metal that has electronics in it, everything shorts out. Yeah. That happens so much.
Although it did short at Rumble, but then Spike shut the power off with a lever.
It just seems like they short out really easily when they
they're not grounded or insulated. Yeah.
Okay.
So Spike shuts off the power, but I guess that doesn't turn off the power to the security system.
Right.
Because then Chip rolls through a laser beam and turns on the alarm.
Yeah, you want your security system
to be on a generator.
Yeah, for that very reason.
I think it's where Megatron says, "Thrust, bring him back." It does not sound like Frank Welker. I think it's Wally Burr filling in.
You're right. I noticed that. Let's hear that.
Megatron. The mobilized human escaped.
He is harmless.
Thrust, bring him back.
Yeah, you're totally right. Yeah, it's a difference.
Either that or it just wasn't processed.
It just doesn't sound... To me, it doesn't sound like Frank Welker at all. But...
No.
And that would make sense, but because of what I can't say it now, but because of what we're going to touch on in script evasions, why this scene even exists, it makes sense of why it would not be Frank Welker necessarily. But
okay, all right, I'm on the edge of my seat.
Yeah, me too,
Ryan. So yeah, as we said, Chip gets on board a cargo truck.
Mm-hmm.
He gets out of the facility. He's going to have Thrust coming after him. The truck eventually reaches a gas and diner, and Chip just rolls out and heads to Autobot headquarters.
This escape. Lasts a full minute on screen.
Again, this is part of that trucker culture. I like the freedom that this truck driver has. Like, he's like, well, I'm working for the Decepticons now, but
also he traveled.
He's not really a slave.
No,
he gets to stop at the diner.
But also, he traveled maybe half an hour, and is like, well, time for a break. Well, I got to get a greasy spoon.
Oh yeah,
it did say last chance gas and food though.
Yeah, I just. Good for that truck driver. He's kind of making it work in a difficult situation. I'm assuming he's getting paid.
I get sure.
He's not a slave, I guess.
Chip arrives at Autobot headquarters and he interacts with Teletran, and that's where he's discovered that flight plan was altered. Megatron did it. The rocket's destroyed. Wow! But when asking about Cosmos, Thrust smashes through the ceiling of the cave. And blows up Teletran and takes Chip back to the power plant. Now there's no hope at all.
I have so many things about this. So why can't Teletran 1 talk all of a sudden? When he's asked who did it, he just shows a picture of Megatron. And then we have a close-up on Chip's face as he reads what must be text on a screen we can't see. Was this episode written, or New Year's Day, when everybody's hungover? It's just so poorly put together. And then, so, okay, Teletran 1 also misspells Cosmos's name. It's spelled C-O-S-M-S.
Cosms?
Cosms. How did Thrust find him? How did Thrust find Chip?
Maybe he was just guessing.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that they're like, well, he's going back to the Ark. I'm just going to fly in there because I know I can.
So Chip's reaction to Thrust aiming at Teletran 1, he goes, a very heartfelt delivery. He says, not Teletran 1, that's all we have left. And I know it isn't, but it was very sad to me.
Yeah. He believed it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like he hasn't seen Teletran 1 blow up before.
I know, but now the Autobots are gone. In his mind, Teletran 1's the last vestige.
I gotcha. Yeah, I getcha.
There's nobody to fix it every episode.
We need to make a supercut of all the times that Decepticons smash through a rocky ceiling.
I want to see a montage of Teletran Run getting blown up.
It happens
a lot.
I think we've seen Laserbeak do it.
We've seen
the Autobots do it sometimes.
Yeah. I say we've seen it at least a half a dozen times.
Okay, you make that montage. Yeah, I'll make the cave montage. That. He could have just walked through the front door. It's always open.
He flies back out through the front door.
Right. We're inches from the sun.
Well,
Cosmos has
keep saying that, but the sun. If we were inches from the sun, you couldn't see anything but the sun.
Oh man, Ryan has no room for hyperbole.
I let it go the first time.
Cosmos has control, but I think they did look about 3 football fields away from the sun.
You couldn't see anything but the sun if that were the case.
Yeah, well, the explosion from the ship hitting the sun would never have been as big.
Would
have been as big as it was.
You could never hit the sun.
But that explosion wouldn't be perceptible to that size.
Sure it would.
Oh, for Christ's sake, let's get on with it. Come on, we all know what's up.
Yeah, I'm right.
He's just being a prick for the sake of being a prick.
I'm not.
Yes, you are. There's no other reason to go this manner of conversation. Because the listener's going to be confused and be like, you're right. They were exactly a couple inches from the sun. Got to make sure they're not confused.
I let it go the first time.
I'm glad. Thanks for letting it go. You're granting me that mercy. Such a benevolent God.
You're welcome.
Cosmos, he got his control back. It's time to head back to Earth, which is apparently only 100 miles from the sun.
Yeah. No. They get back really quick. If they were traveling, how long would it take them realistically to get back from the sun to the Earth?
I guess, I mean, it depends on their velocity.
It takes light 8 minutes.
Yeah.
And some change.
I don't know how fast Cosmos can tow the fucking Autobots.
Anyway, but they get back
seems
fast.
Pretty fast.
They get back fast, which is good because shit's getting real.
So I guess we're to assume that Ramjet destroying Teletran 1 is what turned this around, right?
Yeah, because now Cosmos has control back.
Right.
So it's Ramjet's fault.
Right.
Yeah.
You'd think Megatron would be like, don't destroy Teletran 1.
Well,
thought they were dead.
Yeah,
so
he didn't know that.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Just blow it up. Yep. So that inadvertently, that actually Chip did actually help.
Right. In the weirdest roundabout, yes! Never would have happened that way
but
system.
At helped. The end of the day, it's always
it's
Chip.
Still,
it's true.
He can't help. He helps even when he isn't even.
He doesn't even know he's
helping. He doesn't even know he's helping, and he's helping.
He was there to try and help, but he thinks he didn't help.
But he still did.
Team Chip.
There's so much energy. In fact, warning, there's too much energy around here. It's from jet engines. Starscream rallies his seekers to see what's what. What's what is a human attack squad. The seekers engage. Many of the human jets are destroyed. The rest retreat.
What was their plan?
I don't know.
To bomb the facility? I mean, I guess collateral damage, killing all the humans in there, too.
That's not above the American government.
It's true. It's like, it made me think of Outbreak, where they want to bomb that town in order to control the spread.
It made me think of real life, where Obama's administration killed more innocent civilians than any other with drone strikes.
Ugh, that's sad.
But none of these humans died. They either fled or parachuted, so everything's cool.
Mm-hmm. Of course, they got a punch out. I liked this dogfight. I thought it was neat. I liked some good explosions, some good...
This is some G.I. Joe style
dogfighting.
It is.
Fighting. I always love it when you see the Transformers fighting human machines.
I'm glad that there's human resistance involved.
Yeah, like Independence Day.
Yeah. There's like, so that, you know, there's something beyond the slave town. You know, there's other people trying.
Well, they've only
to...
got Megatronio 1.
That's true. Yeah. The rest of the world should probably be helping out.
You'd think there'd be a very coordinated effort.
I'd think
there's only like 10 Decepticons.
I would think Nurgle would jump in on this action.
That's why I was saying they should just bomb Megatronio 1 or whatever. Just nuke it off the planet.
This would be a good... I would have really enjoyed to see Nurgle show up with Atlantica.
That would have just made... Like, to confuse the episode even more, the Atlanteans pop out.
Now, does Nurgle side with the Decepticons and try to help them, or side with humanity?
He sides with the Decepticons, but in a roundabout way to somehow serve himself somehow. But it all goes to shit, and then, you know...
This could have been a three-parter.
Yeah. I like it.
Bring in all the world's assholes.
They should have, for like the finale of Transformers, done like the Seinfeld episode where you see all the mm-hmm. ancillary characters come in at the very end. That was a terrible finale.
Megatron, he's toying with his victims. He's explaining, soon all cities will fall to him. Burger then runs to attack Megatron, who knocks him to the ground. But then... the Autobots arrive. Impossible. I saw you disintegrated, and I'm going to play Optimus Prime.
Hold on. Before you do that, watch the way he slaps him to the ground.
I know.
It's so fast and funny the way Megatron slaps Burger down.
It's a two-frame slap.
It looks like something out of Family Guy, the way he falls so
Well, you're right, because Megatron's movement is fluid, but Burger's is not. Burger, he's up and he's down.
We should probably get that on video. Smiggity smack.
That would like hurt.
Yeah, he'd be dead.
Yeah, his head would have just caved in. Punk.
There might be two frames there.
Yeah, it's
Burger,
pretty, it made me laugh out loud. Lol.
But the Autobots arrive. Impossible, I saw you disintegrated.
Impossible, I saw you disintegrated.
Illusion, Megatron. Just as you made the people of Earth see us Autobots as villains, so we too staged an illusion.
No,
they
didn't.
They did not. They got lucky.
You staged nothing. You had given up.
Yeah, that's what I had here. That Hound made the ship look like it exploded, but they just abandoned the ship.
Like, right.
Prime's like fronting like it was their plan all along.
They got fucking lucky.
They had no plan.
We got ourselves a good old-fashioned battle, boys. Mm-hmm. All the season 2 and 1, good guys, bad guys, engage in a power plant smackdown.
Yeah, it could have been. I mean, I like the fight fine, but nobody moves. It's the least dynamic fight ever. Like, everybody just stands in place like it's Civil War soldiers and fires
at
each other.
It's a lot of shots. A lot of different, scenes.
It looks fine, but it's just very static.
Yeah.
It's not as the one a few episodes ago where... You had Huffer taking drifts and Ratchet falling down and flying at the camera.
Yeah,
you're right.
Was great.
That's a lot of pants.
It is pretty static, but it is cool though.
It is cool, yeah.
A lot of heroic poses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's an interesting way to present the battle, I will say.
The Decepticons are outnumbered and have
and they
lost
actually
the advantage.
Are.
They've always been outnumbered.
Well,
that's
the
thing about this show.
Not at like the I can't remember if it was Solar New. There was one where they say they're outnumbered, but they're not. You're right. The Autobots say they're outnumbered, but they're not. So yeah, the Decepticons are always outnumbered. I hate that part. They just showed Ratchet firing from his fists for some reason.
Pew.
Why?
They've lost the advantage. They turn tail and escape. The humans are free. Central City Mayor begs for Optimus Prime's forgiveness, while Burger also promises to make amends.
And Prime's like, you know what? You're going to jail.
Optimus Prime, please stay here on Earth.
I doubt anyone will ever forgive me.
No.
Nope.
I'll make amends. I'll disband my private army.
Oh, that's real big of
Mighty
you, Burger.
Wordy.
They all quit when they found out what a dog lunch you are.
I said I'm sorry.
You are going to face justice, and may it be kinder to you than it was to us.
You're exiled to space.
Can we have a meme of Burger's face and it says dog lunch on it?
What a great put down.
Yeah, I also like he's like, I'll make amends. Well, you'll probably just make license plates because you're going to prison. Yeah. And now the Autobots go home to fix Teletran 1 for the millionth time.
Yeah, they no reference to Teletran 1 being destroyed.
They should make Teletran 1 out of the material from the black box. Why do you drive on a parkway and park in a driveway?
All right.
This episode ends with a whimper.
This episode is over. It had about everybody.
I mean,
you had a whole side plot dealing with Spike finding the damn Decepticon footage being pointless, a waste of time. There are probably still people that don't trust the Autobots, the same way there's going to be people through the end of time believing that Joe Biden stole the election.
Or that coronavirus is fake.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't want to get political, but Trump's a liar.
Brave.
Actually, you know who the biggest villain to me right now is? It's Rudy Giuliani.
Oh my God, he's lost his mind.
He's the biggest villain. He's a little kooky like all the rest of them are, but he's not a dum-dum. He knows that Trump has lost the election. He's just in it for the money.
Yeah, $20,000 a day.
He is just cashing in on this, convincing Trump, oh, there's still a chance. We got to do this. And going to court looking like a total dumb shit and just cashing checks and sowing further, hatred for our institutions.
Yeah, totally. Did you see that weird thing where his face was melting?
Yes.
Was it hair dye?
Nobody knows.
I saw somebody interviewed a hair dye expert, and that person was that ain't hair dye.
There were lots of them. I read a story where they interviewed like four. And I'm like, this is where we are. This is what's happening in the world. Anyway. He's a total scumbag.
Let's see. We got new voice actors.
Oh.
Well, not really a new voice actor, but Cosmos, this was his first vocal appearance, voiced by Michael McConaughey, who we've covered in the past. And Michael, I will redo your website for $5,000.
Is it bad?
It'll be easy. We'll use Squarespace.
It's
not sponsoring us, but I'm very familiar with the Squarespace platform. Reach out if you're looking into it. No, I dissed it a little bit whenever we first talked about Michael McConaughey. It's very Web 1.0.
It hasn't been updated in a while.
Ever.
It still has the counter down at the bottom.
It might, actually.
Does anybody remember that shit?
I can't remember the name of his website. Let's just look real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, it's old. Great.
It's old. Last changes as of October 5th, 2015.
There you go.
This site is still under construction. And it says, I'm happy you dropped by. This site's still under construction, and the way things are going probably will be for the rest of my life. So there'll be continuing changes as I add to the site and make updates here and there. Hasn't happened for 5 years, but...
Michael, you got voice acting to do. Let someone else handle
we can help
this for
you.
You.
Holler. We can help you.
Holler.
It's not like uneasy on the eyes. It just needs
I was thinking it would be
it's just not contemporary.
Angel fire with green text on a black sparkly background.
All these gifs of different rotating skulls.
Thankfully it doesn't have that stuff. Okay.
So that's Michael McConaughey. What do you guys want to talk about?
About how close to the sun they were.
God. Actually,
what's the next segment?
Script deviation.
Hey, listeners, I'm sorry for misleading you. They were more than inches from the sun. And when do you even start to count how many inches you are? Like, what do you count as the
surface
extension of the sun's reach?
That's, it's a fair point.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be thousands of miles.
Are we not inches from the sun by that measure?
It's true.
I,
are we in the sun?
That's why I'm so warm. No wonder my balls are sticking to my leg.
I would like to think that that's a measurement. Like somehow,
there's the Kelvin scale.
How do you know if you're in the sun? Well, when your balls start sticking to your leg. Oh, okay.
Okay.
Like they have on the Voyager spacecraft, there was a benchmark where its balls weren't sticking to its leg anymore, and that's where they know that they exited the influence of the sun.
Corona.
Yeah.
I'm just picturing a poor, sad man on the Voyager.
No. The Voyager.
He's talking about the spacecraft,
not
that
the Star Trek.
The
real Voyager. Yeah, so it's like the satellite Voyager.
Right. There's
with
not a ball
with a nut sack on it.
Oh, I see. The Voyager
like
has
truck
its
nuts?
Own nut sack.
Yeah, sure.
That's a great idea. Truck nuts on the Voyager.
Just start putting
spacecraft.
Nut sacks on everything. That's like my dad, but there was a guy at work that would just draw penises on everything and be really like quietly laugh about it.
Oh God, that guy, what's he got in his basement?
penis drawings.
Or penises.
I wonder what astronaut has done that kind of bullshit. Like
drawn a penis?
Yeah, on the International Space Station, did some cosmonaut draw a dick and balls on an instrument with a Sharpie?
I hope so.
I wouldn't think the ISS, but I bet like in the Apollo modules, they're because those guys were Air Force pilots.
Yeah.
They were terrible people.
No, they were great. They were railroaders for sure.
Ryan, would you like to talk about
In the Real World?
So, Megatron's Master Plan aired October 15th, 1985. In the American Top 40, hey, let's do a Tears for Fears song.
Love it.
Yeah. Everybody wants to rule the world.
I'll be playing that tonight.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's one of our songs on our set list. Oh. It's always the second or third song on our set list. I play it every time I play.
This song was number one for 2 weeks in June of 1985. As it's been pointed out time and time again, I don't know music, but there are certain types of music and certain songs that just transport me in a really bizarre emotional way that I don't understand. Mm-hmm. Africa, Toto's Africa does it.
Makes you
to
cry.
Me.
Makes you cry.
Everybody Wants to Rule the World is the same, but it's also kind of understandable because it's a super depressing song just about jingoism and about how nobody cares about the environment and fleeting flame and fame and success. Yeah, so
that's
fun. Late stage capitalism's good stuff.
Yeah.
Caleb, you when you play that song live, I mean that's at an iconic piano chords, is that what you'd call it? Just the way it opened the boom?
Yeah, I go to my electric piano setting and turn, there's a certain setting that I turn all the way up that gives it like they call it a chorus effect, and it's like, it adds that synthesized meat to it.
Got it.
Synthesized meat is just a good band name. Yeah. The music video briefly features the Cabazon Dinosaur attraction in California, also well known for its appearance in Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and the 1989 Super Mario Brothers advertisement, The Wizard, which I still love, that movie.
I think Dennis Miller used to use it as his intro on either SNL or didn't he have an HBO show?
No, it was his HBO show, before he went insane.
Yeah.
Does that still, exist out there, that dinosaur thing?
Yeah, it's still there.
That's cool.
I guess insane in a way that is unconfusing. Like, he was always kind of nuts, but...
Hey there, Chachi.
So it's like, that kind of brings it full circle for Dinobots in a weird way. Dinosaurs.
I thought you were supposed to make dinosaurs!
They were only superficially in this, so...
Yeah, I wouldn't they call weren't it, even superficially
in
it.
I wouldn't call it full circle, but that's okay.
Next episode.
Yeah,
next episode.
Number one at the box office, this episode aired the next day. That's the last one, so it's still Commando. So I went with a seasonal choice, the 1985 John Cusack vehicle, Better Off Dead. Oh,
I've never seen.
Oh, it's a very good movie.
It's very crazy.
I love it.
It does take place around Christmas. If you've never seen it, it's truly bizarre. It's a surrealist black comedy about like adolescent heartbreak and suicide with claymation.
Yeah.
And animation.
And it's where if you ever hear us go, I want my $2. Yep. It's from that. It's a good movie. You should watch it now.
Basically, John Cusack plays a high school kid dumped by his girlfriend, and she starts dating some jerk skiing jock. Standard 80s comedy stuff, especially when the foreign exchange student girl that Cusack starts hanging out with eventually turns into the love interest at the end, and John Cusack's character keeps trying to kill himself over his ex, and then there's a skiing competition. I honestly don't know if this movie's any good, but it is enjoyable.
It is.
Along with what you said, the $2 kid, Curtis Armstrong, best known as Booger from Revenge of the Nerds, plays a great character in there where he's coaching Lane, who's Cusack's character, how to ski. And he goes, go that way really fast. Yeah, and if something gets in your way, turn.
Yeah. I know there was a handful of ski-based 80s
That was like,
movies.
Again, with the trucker movies, there were ski movies all over the 80s some reason.
Was the ski competition against the main jock guy?
It was just a race.
Okay.
Yeah. And he, and yeah, it was just a race.
But that's, there's so much more like gravitating around that event.
There's some weird stuff, like the mother keeps making these bizarre food concoctions and one of them like just inches off the table.
Yeah. His father was one of the main characters on MASH for a while.
I don't even remember who was, plays
the,
his father.
The British, the, anyway. But also there's my favorite part in there. There's some Asian, Asian guys drag racing. And they talk like they learned all their English from listening to sports.
Like sports announcers, yeah.
And
well, look at Mr. Lane Bryant right here on the he's come to win today, ladies and gentlemen.
So they don't have any stereotypical Asian accent.
No, it's quite the opposite.
They have a megaphone on top of their car, and they run around town speaking out of it like that.
It's really a great movie.
If you remember the film One Crazy Summer, I don't know if you do.
Yes, I've seen all.
It came out a year later, starring John Cusack and a young Demi Moore, and it's like a spiritual sequel to Better Off Dead
because it was not as good.
It was the same writer and director, and it also had animation, and he was an animator, and that's why animation's in both of those movies. He also created the whammy on the game show Press Your Luck.
Oh, wow.
Savage Steve Holland is his name. He produced Eek the Cat and now works for the Disney Channel.
Eek the Cat was a big, was that a Nickelodeon show?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he worked for Nickelodeon as well. And I have no fun facts in history. Nothing seemed to happen this week. So good. That's the real world.
And by this week, it's like one day later than the last episode.
Yeah, it's hard to find fun facts. Next couple episodes, I have some stuff.
When we started doing this, I think we took for granted the fact. I think we thought it was weekly, maybe.
It was before, but yeah, because I was, or even more less than that, because I was doing TV guide covers.
It also feels like songs were on the charts a lot longer at this point in time. Music wasn't as fractured.
I don't know. Most of them were only like 2 or 3 weeks.
You think?
Yeah.
I know.
It's just the way we're talking about them feels like they're on there longer because we're just...
Well, is Dire Straits still on the charts?
Yeah, well, this is...
Right now, as we speak, you've just chosen...
Yeah.
Tears for Fears?
Yeah,
because... He's deviating from the top.
Because they were on the charts for 3 weeks, which means 15 of these episodes, they're Dire Straits.
Right. Right. Okay, you're right. It feels like it's a long time.
I like that he's choosing other ones just to talk about. Yeah,
more about Dire Straits. Like, did you guys know Mark Knopfler liked puppies?
No, I did. Oh, I see what you're saying.
I get it.
How much more can we dig?
It's a bit.
Yeah.
He was born.
The Knopfler name is
trace it back to like 1000 AD.
This becomes a Transformers/Mark Knopfler podcast.
Yeah. Rip deviations.
The script on this one's not available online. I can only assume it's because it was like 5 pages long with a bunch of brackets that say, fill this shit in later. The reason I say this is because the slapdash, bizarre pacing and storytelling issues with this episode could be laid at the feet of the fact that huge swaths of this episode were padded out to make up runtime. The following sections here were added to in a rush afterwards because the primary shooting script was like a third too short. So Cosmos not being able to change course, Chip's escape takes up a whole minute of screen time, Thrust blasting Teletran 1, that's why I expect they had to add who Wally Burr, that ADR for Megatron ordering Thrust to follow Chip, and then a lot of the Autobots transforming when they're back on Earth is taken directly from Atlantis Arise. So a ton of this is just filler.
Wow. Yeah. I just wanted to say, I found what appears to be a script of sorts.
It's just the dialogue script.
Okay.
As recorded.
So,
trying to make me look stupid.
So, fuck this episode is what you're saying.
It was fine. I didn't hate it.
It's just, but you're right, a lot of filler.
Yeah.
More Spike and Ravage battling it out. The weird timeline confusion.
If you'd left out the whole, like, imagine the whole Cosmos not being able to change course and Chip not going to Teletran 1, you can dump all that easily.
Right.
And it doesn't matter.
And that's 10 minutes.
It changes the plot not at all.
That's 10 minutes. Then you don't need either of those things. It's just Trailbreaker dragging the Autobots back to Earth in 10
or
seconds.
Cosmos, yeah.
Well, I mean, if the Cosmos, I guess he would still be dragging them.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yep. That's
beautiful.
I think the scheme was very successful. I think
It wasn't.
Close. It was close.
I mean, I don't think the Decepticons made any really bad moves again, the Autobots just got really lucky,
and the Decepticons got unlucky.
And got yeah, that's it. That's basically the long and short of it. I think the Autobots, for all purposes, should have died.
They were probably seconds away from death.
Prime gave up, even.
Maybe even inches away from death. How far would you say they are from death, Ryan?
Well, actually.
So I would say their scheme was actually, I'm going to give it an 8.5.
This is a good one, yeah. I'll stick with it.
I mean, playing with the media.
Yeah. I mean,
if the Decepticons don't have the physical ability to just kill the Autobots, they're playing on their nobility to... get rid of them. They know the Autobots would accept the humans' decision.
It's similar to Heavy Metal War in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're that's another thing where you're supposed to abandon the Earth because Megatron cheated and won the mano-a-mano with Prime.
Right.
Yeah, I'll go with that. I'll go with an 8. It was a good plan. It just happened. The Autobots fell ass backwards into not dying.
Right. Prime even gave up.
But then he tries to change history when he gets back. We created an illusion.
An illusion, Megatron. We did
nothing. Yeah.
Shut up. Shut up.
Prime being a revisionist here.
I'm the ghost of the iconic movement.
I didn't really have one specifically, but I'll say for me, the acting skill of Corey Burton and Michael Horton, who played Spike and Chip, respectively, was really on point. Like, the emotional aspects and the despair, I thought, elevated this episode in a way that made me feel something for a completely ludicrous script.
Mm-hmm. I agree. They did. It was... Even watching these things as old people, everything feels corny, and we just kind of embrace it and move past it. But every now and again, there's these vocal performances that are just so real.
Yeah. That's among them. Yeah. I would argue that the older I get, the easier it is to make me feel things. But, yeah.
Caleb, you got anything?
Nothing to add to what you've already said.
My bullet points, Burger randomly going crazy.
That was great.
I feel like I remember that.
His Shakespearean soliloquy was amazing.
Spike kicking Ravage's ass over and over again kind of stuck out to me. But maybe the most iconic scene is the statutorily questionable Soundwave and Tapes party with the teens.
Those girls seem very into Soundwave.
Soundwave, you got to back off that. Why are you here, Soundwave? Is he playing the music? Is he actually a party DJ?
Yeah, I think that's what's happening. He's actually making the music.
How am I so slow to pick up on that?
It's not because it's not animated in any way to show that happening. Yeah.
And all of his tapes are outside of him.
Well, he's playing his radio.
Maybe Buzzsaw.
Buzzsaw. He's got the jams. All right.
And we never see Frenzy. Next time on the Autobot Decepticast.
We kick off yet another two-parter featuring our prehistoric pals, not known for being smarter. It's an off-cadence rhyme.
It's a sideways rhyme.
Caleb, do you want to plug your Mike Seibert again?
Sure. Go check out the episode that I was on with Mike Seibert and Greg from Unfunny Nerd Tangent.
Mike's 297.
Episode 297 of Mike Seibert Radio. Where we discuss the...
you mean the Mike Seibert Radio Hour?
Yeah, the Mike Seibert Radio Hour. That's what I really want to call it, really. We discuss the Ronin and anti-hero archetype. It's really good, I think, and we kind of talk about my favorite action movie of all time, Road Warrior.
And maybe by the time this comes out, there'll be a TF Reanimated featuring perhaps Ryan and Aaron, and a Unfunny Nerd Tangent also featuring Ryan and Aaron about... Gremlins.
Who knows what the future will bring?
Don't know anymore.
I could be incarcerated.
We could all be slaves.
If you'd like to support us, you can do it in one of two ways, via Patreon or through some merch at our APDC store. Check out the goods at our website or patreon.com/apoddcast. Other than that, please continue to listen on your platform of choice, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, and tune in. Please leave a review. I don't care how many stars you give us. Some of us do.
5 stars, please.
And follow us on our social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all of them at apoddcast. And, of course, the web presence, autopoddecepticast.com.
There's probably not still time to get some Christmas presents from there, but just order yours. Did we get some nice prints that just dropped?
And there's... posters, there's buttons.
Buy something. Merch, give us some
merch,
money.
Merch, merch, merch.
Give
merch.
Us money merch, Patreon, money. Money.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, bye, bye.
Boy, I can't wait for the next episode. It is fucking... it's my favorite.
It's ridiculous.
It's like, what the... Wait a minute.
I didn't think it was as wacky as you guys seem to think.
It seems like the wackiest one I've seen.
Nothing makes sense from the first moment.
Nothing makes sense. I'll grant you that.
The beats and the pacing and then just like the general... Yeah, the beats are like, what?
Yeah, that I'll give you. I just didn't think it was wacky.
Yeah, whatever.
I just thought it was...
Wacky,
nonsensical,
wacky in their inability to tell a straightforward tale.
that was like a curly Q of a pig's tail of a tail. Oh, see?
Mm-hmm.
Brew Cells is the sponsor of Autopod Decepticast. Yes.